Yep, welcome to the book club on Record of Lodoss War, Deadlifts, and Wonderland.
That made it sound like you really enjoyed this game.
Well, I mean, we'll get into it. We'll get into
it. Yeah. Let's just kick it off with this first thing. Like, who names a game this, right? Welcome to the November Book Club with the Campfire Gaming Podcast crew. We're talking this mouthful of a title, Record of, is it Lodoss? Lodoss?
I say Lodoss.
Record of Lodoss War, Deedlit in Wonder Labyrinth. From this point on, I'm just going to call it Deedlit. So make it easier for well, I can't. I guess I can't do that because it's the main character's name. Whatever this game is.
Does this get the record for the longest title?
So I'm pretty sure it does. I'm pretty sure it does.
I think so. I'd have to go look. Like, we might have another one where, like, maybe in a series, you know, that we've... Well, I guess this is technically, what, a series, right? I know nothing of this.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know anything about this series at all. Did we want to kick this off with like a proper intro or
what? This isn't proper.
Are we just diving right in now?
This isn't proper enough for you, Rich? Come on, we don't do anything serious here at the
all right, fuck it anymore. Fuck it, we're doing it live. Let's just go. All right.
But we will lead off with spoilers ahead. No surprise to you returning listeners. For you new people, we talk about everything and anything we feel like that relates to the game. Second, go to campfiregamingpodcast.com. There you can find links to all our socials and especially a link to our Discord, where sometimes I like taking crap on games or movies or things like that.
And you can feisty, also make suggestions to the book club. We do like to take those from our users and use those to make informed decisions on what we are going to play next to the book club, so that you can all participate with us in some of the games that you think should be played by other people.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Speaking of next book clubs or future book clubs, we are actually going to be doing a December book club this year, which we don't usually do, but since it's all we do now, we figured, hey, what the hell, let's do a short one. So our December book club game is going to be Titanfall 2, probably mainly focused on the campaign. I think I'm going to dip into some multiplayer and see if there's a community there, see if it's still any fun. But
I was going to say, do they even have people that... are there even servers left alive for that? Is the Titanfall 2 multiplayer even still up?
I'm sure it is. I mean, it let me load into a lobby. I didn't play anything, but...
You're going to be sitting in queue for like 30 minutes.
But yes, hop on the Discord.
3-hour queue.
Can't be any worse than the Master Chief collection, 6 years ago?
right.
But yeah, so hop on the Discord, drop in some suggestions. We'd love to,
come play games with us.
Yeah. So also for any new listeners out there, my name is Matt. Joining me today is Rich and Mike. We're so glad to have everybody here.
What's up? I'm the Rich. Not the mic.
But you have
I'm
a mic.
I'm the Matt, not the Rich.
No, but we're confusing any new listeners. So
hell yeah.
We haven't even, like, there's very little introduction, so I think we're already in confused, like, land, dazed and confused.
Yeah.
So, Deadlifts in Wonderland, right?
Yeah, basically. So this is like a standard Metroidvania, right? Like action roleplay adventure, kind of in the form of, like, if you played Metroid, it's a lot like that.
Yeah. I'm not very experienced with any of, like, the Metroid games or Castlevania games or even the genre. Like, this is kind of like a pretty fresh dive into the genre. How close are a lot of the systems in this to those other games? Because I know that, like, for Metroid, you end up collecting a lot of, like, different types of weaponry to essentially unlock more pieces of the map, whereas this didn't really have that.
So there were things that you needed to unlock in this one to get further or progression within the map, like the double jump, the triple jump, the...
I think the same. Oh, right.
And triple jump.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty close. A lot of what you'll find with these games is much more the labyrinth piece of it. It's a lot of twists, turns, backtracking, going through areas you've been through maybe once before to find something, getting a little further, finding an item that gets you through a part that you haven't been through yet, things like that. So it's really just a big exploration game. And it can have items like that, or it can just be a puzzle with switches and things like that, where you have to press a button to open a doorway over here, and so on.
And this is kind of RPG light, right? I mean, you kill monsters, you level up, and you get like stats and things like that, and you can get like, you can buy like different types of weapons to help improve like your attack speed and damage. Is that more of like the Castlevania side? Because I've never played that series either.
Not really. The leveling up, it's in some types of Metroidvania games, but not like original Castlevania or original Metroid. Those ones didn't have like a level up system. I want to say Symphony of the Night or something like that. Or Bloodstained. One of those probably had a leveling system, but those are supposed to be like successors to Castlevania or whatever. Maybe I'm wrong on that. I know that they're just Metroidvanias with vampire that you go hunt down, but I think that's when they started the leveling. I think it was just to make it a little more robust and a little more depth to the games is why they started adding the extra features like leveling up and finding the different combinations of weapons. So like with Metroid, you typically found like roller bombs, so you could roll and drop bombs as you went, or like missiles. It wasn't really a whole lot of, here's a brand new spear, or, you know, a longer range weapon, or a short range weapon, or a faster weapon, things like that. It was more like upgrades.
Gotcha. Okay. Oh, that's cool. To kind of go into this a little bit, I know nothing about this Record of Lodoss War. Like, this is obviously a series of games, because diving into the narrative for this game, I did feel quite a bit lost, kind of coming at it from this game, because I feel like there's plenty of other games that have explained, like, there's a lot of explaining to do from playing some of these other games. Have you played a lot of these other games, Mike? Can you kind of give us, like, a backdrop of what is actually happening here?
So this one's actually more an anime or a manga than it is other games. I think that I played Record of Lodoss War on the Dreamcast, and I'm trying to remember what the title, let me look that up really quick. But it is a, like, anime and book more than it is a video game. So
okay.
I don't know a whole lot about it, except for, this dude, he's a knight, his name is Parn, and Deedlit is all about him, and that's all I know, literally all that I know.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. No, that's kind of one of my two complaints about the game is, like, and again, I'm going to go for anybody that jumps into a series that they weren't there from the start or haven't started from the start, is I was lost, and all these people are coming in and they're just talking. I just like, whatever, I'll just move on and keep killing things. But it was hard for me to kind of track what was going on, since even Deedlit, as you're running around meeting characters, she's like, person, you're here. And they're like,
yeah,
blah, blah, blah. And then they run off. And it's like, that's all it was, like a small little interaction. So it was a little rough to follow. I mean, the general gist of the story, you know, you got from start to end, you're in a labyrinth and it's a dream or whatever, you got to get to the end. But, like, the overall story and how these characters all know each other and past experiences, like, I'm so confused. I didn't know what was going on.
Right. Yeah, you didn't get a lot of that until, like, the end. Like, once you started to see what was really going on, and the conversations between, like, Pirates is what I kept calling her, and Deedlit, you didn't really catch some of those, you know, relationships. Like, you were like, oh, they maybe know this person, but who the hell is it?
Right. Yeah. And so it made it really jarring when you're talking to this character, that character, that character. And, you know, Deedlit already knows who all of these people are. And I'm sitting here like, I don't know who any of these people are. Like, I don't know what the relation is. Like, one minute I'm talking to some lady and she's mad at me, and then the next minute, you know, like we're totally cool now and everything's fine. Mm-hmm. I can't shit on it too much, because I mean, like, this is a very indie game. You know, like this game is not long. I think it took about 5-ish hours to complete the whole thing, start to finish. Like,
took good people like 5 hours to finish it.
Right. Some of the
people that suck, it took a little longer.
Yeah, for the people who are good like me, I mean, it took me like an evening to finish the whole game. And then, you know, for people like Matt, it took a little bit longer. But so this was
probably more like 7 for me.
This was developed by Team Ladybug and published by Playism. So, I mean, like I said, like, this is a very, very indie title. So I wasn't expecting, you know, like, you know, Oscar winning writing or anything like that. But I did think that it was a bit hard to follow, other than just like the obvious, right? You know, you're playing as Deedlit. You kind of discover that you're essentially wandering around her grief-stricken mind. You know, Parn has died and she's not willing to kind of accept that yet. And so you're going through this essential like labyrinth of like emotions and, you know, repression, essentially. I mean, I thought it was kind of good. It was a little profound. Like, it was easy to digest. Like, I liked it. But it was kind of confusing given the backdrop of not knowing anything about outside of the game and what was going on.
I should have found, like, a hour-long YouTube video on the story of Wreck-It Lodoss in 5 minutes.
I fell asleep. I tried watching when I fell asleep. It was late night, so I never got in through that. But, what was I going to say? Oh, with these games, it's not really easy to tell a story. Like, you only have so much that you can work with. It's, you know, unless you want a ton of dialogue in the game. You know, I think Metroid does a lot of it with just visuals. There's not a lot of, like, let me have a full banter back and forth. It's more of a, you see that thing. Uh-oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they relied pretty heavily on effectively exposition of the characters, just kind of text talking back and forth. There's no voice acting or anything like that in this game. It's pretty much just, you know, and it's just typing out the text for you. Like, it's almost like a classic JRPG, but in a Metroidvania, is kind of what it felt like.
I think that's what they were going for, since it's like that anime genre, like it's part of that. They probably went for more of that style, and I think this is their second Metroidvania style game that they've made since becoming a studio.
What was the other game? Do you remember? You said it was on like the Dreamcast or something.
That was a different game, different studio. The original game was just Record of Lodoss, and then there was a Record of Lodoss War Advent of Cardis. And you fight a lot of the same bad guys that you saw in this one, at least in the Dreamcast one. But it's a lot more, it's like a Diablo, basically. You run around and chop stuff.
Okay. I mean, honestly, like, I for not knowing hardly anything going into this, I mean, I still felt like I learned quite a bit of what was going on. Like I said, like, they really dove into the exposition of the storytelling, where, like, you know that this place of Lodoss is constantly under war. Like, there's always war happening, and that's one of the main antagonists' kind of motivations. Like, they want to continuously keep this war going. Though I don't know if it's all just kind of in Deedlit's mind that this is kind of happening, but because as you finish the game, you realize, okay, Deedlit was all just dreaming this sort of stuff and wakes up and everything seems to be all hunky-dory, you know. So it's like, cool, like, but if I had lost, would that actually have had consequences in the world? Probably not. But the main character, the main antagonist, what was her name? Carla.
Yep.
Like the main evil lady, but there were like the, I don't know what it, Nihil, Nihil, the final boss.
Which is basically like an incarnate of Parn's memory in Deedlit. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But otherwise, like, Carla was just like,
about that name.
Right. She was just like, okay, I want to keep Lodoss in permanent conflict because you guys are going to kill each other anyway. So, you know, if we really want to exercise balance, we have to constantly be throwing war at each other and dying as part of the process. And really, like, all the, like, it was kind of nice because it really was all kind of emphasizing this whole theme of grief and dealing with grief. Because, as we've said, Parn is in the whole lore of this backdrop is dead. Like, he died in this Lodoss war. And yep. Because, you know, Deedlit was very much in love with Parn, is now dealing with the consequences of his death and is not really willing to accept that he's gone and now I have to move on. She's not willing to do that yet. And that's kind of where you have to go through essentially this mind labyrinth of Deedlit to, you know, resolve it. And I think it's kind of a cute ending.
So I was... two things. I was thinking about that name, Nihil, the like ending boss that you fight. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, did they name that after like nihilism? Like, are they pushing that whole like existence is pointless piece of this?
It could kinda be. Like,
nothing really matters, you know, everything is meaningless, whatever. Like, really pushing into that aspect of her feelings about life after Parn, right? So,
right. I mean, that's very possible, yeah.
Did you watch the very end of the game? Because there's a short sequence at the very, very end after the credits. Did you watch that?
I don't know. I skipped the credits and just closed the game down.
Okay.
Oh, come on. You never do that. You never do that.
I don't quite remember. Yeah. So I don't know if I actually caught that or not.
So it's Deedlit's walking through like the forest or whatever again.
Mm-hmm.
And one of her friends like falls in front of her basically dead. And is like, Deedlit, we need Parn, blah, 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 blah. And then, like, just falls over. And then Deedlit, like, bolts off into the woods. Like, oh. Who knows what happens next? So right. When you said it was like I like the ending, I was like, did you see the ending?
Well, I didn't see that part, but no, I thought that the where it ended was kind of nice.
You opted for the good ending.
I was done when right before the credits rolled. You know, once the credits were done, Dan was like, cool, close the application, I'm done. It was good. Although I loved how they kind of made that joke too. Like when you're traveling through Deedlit's mind and you're fighting these bosses like, you know, once, maybe twice or something like that. Like Carla keeps coming back and Deedlit's like, death really seems to have no consequence here, does it? And I'm like,
yep.
Yeah, it doesn't. Everybody keeps coming back. Why is everybody still alive after I beat them?
Yep.
So I thought it was funny.
Gameplay-wise, I thought it was pretty tight for as far as like mechanics go. I didn't feel like it was sloppy. I felt like I had good control of the character the whole time. So that's a bonus, especially for like a studio's second game.
Yeah. No, I mean, What else did Team Ladybug, what have they done?
Like, it was another little...
was it another Lodoss game, or is it something else?
Their other one was...
Tohu Luna
Knights.
Yeah.
Oh god, I've never heard of that.
In all fairness, did you ever hear of Record of Lodoss before this?
That's fair enough. No, I have not. No, this was a very unique pick from Mike. This is one of those games that, like, I'm really glad that we kind of just pick things for each other to play, or we take in user feedback, because, one, I never would have guessed that this game would have even existed, and two, not really, like, the kind of game that I play. Like, I don't play a lot of Metroidvanias. Mm-hmm. In fact, I've never played Metroid or Castlevania. I know, that's a big shocker right there. I've never really played those franchises, so, like, diving into this... it was kind of a good taste of what some of those games are like. And I agree, like, this really felt tight, even for, I'm guessing this is a Japanese studio. I don't know much about Team Ladybug. But my guess is that this was a...
Yep, they are Japan.
This is like so it's a Japanese indie studio that I've never heard of. And I'm kind of curious what other things that they've done now. And I'm kind of interested in checking this out because... we were able to dive into this sort of stuff. So, you know, doing a plus one for the book club and its concept, because I think this is really cool. And I agree with you, Mike. I think the controls were extremely tight. There were a couple of places where I did get a little frustrated, where it was like some of the jumps, even when you had like the double jump, or like the, you know, like the swirly tornado jump or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what you call it. I don't remember what it was called. Some of the jumps felt like they were a little too tight to consistently hit. So yeah. Like I would have to do a double jump from like a perfect spot in order to get right to the ledge where I needed to be. There's only a couple places that were like that though.
Yeah, that was the controls. Yeah, like you guys are saying, were great. But yeah, that was the only time. Like every now and then, some of it had to do with timing. Some of it had to do with how they kind of in a few spots designed the level and to get up to different ledges. But there were a few times where like it was just trying to time that jump to be able to get there to the right spot to continue on. But yeah, that was the only time I had any trouble was, you know, just timing those jumps right. And sometimes it felt like the float didn't last as long as it should have when you got whatever it was after the double jump. But that was probably more of a timing issue, a me issue, but it's good.
Yeah, I think it depended because the float, you had a longer float if you were in like wind form versus if you were in the fire form.
Yeah,
right. And I mean, and it depended on how close you were to the ground. You know, I mean, if you were close to the ground, you could permanently hover.
Yeah. And actually control going up and down, which is nice, right. Which helped a few times. Cause I think one of those jumps, it really felt like you had to be to start out with that extra height to jump over to a ledge. That might've been before you got the float when you only had to double jump. But yeah, it was, yeah. The wind form or whatever, Silif was it? I think I have here. That was the wind. What was it? What were those things called? The fire and wind things that followed you around that you could switch between the elements.
I don't remember. It's just some kind of spirit.
It was Sylph and Salamander were their names. At least that's what I wrote down when I picked those up. So,
yeah,
you're making it up. That's not real.
I could be. Yeah. I did like two things to call out for what, like the third book club in a row too. I'll take a shot at Tunic, but I did like how you could switch immediately between those two elements, the fire and wind or whatever. And that when you did want to change and use any items or switch spells, that it did pause the game for you so you could pick through it, unlike Tunic. So,
oh God.
Well, yeah. Dark Souls didn't let you pause either. Like, I think that's just part of the difficulty is going in prepared, right?
Yeah,
well,
but that was one of those games where it really needed it.
Yeah.
In my opinion, like it really needed it because you were doing things where you were kind of flipping between items to a point where like you needed to having to slow down the gameplay quite a bit so that you could flip between things so that you could, you know, fight the boss better. Yeah, like I'm glad that in this one you can do that, right? You can pause the entire game, be like, okay, let me switch to, you know, my spears so I can get longer attacks, or let me switch to this bow. I mean, that's pretty much the majority of the weapons that you have were, quote, swords. At least that's what it was in the category in the shop. And then bows. Like, those were your two primary weapons. Yeah. And then you used magic to kind of supplement all of the other attacks that you could do as well.
Yeah.
Which was cool.
Well, what was nice about the magic and the item stuff was, again, that pause too. Early on, I guess you could probably argue that, yeah, you probably didn't need it to pause because you had so few. But by the end, you know, I had a bunch of different items. I had a bunch of different spells. So I was very happy that it did pause while you were selecting the right one, especially since it's just hold a button and go up or down, right? Mm-hmm. Which is very basic, good, but basic design. So if you're clicking through it trying to find the right thing, it could take a second, but.
Right.
I don't think I used more than one type of item and really just carried on with that basic spell that you started with, the wisp one, the will-o-wisp or whatever.
Oh, dude, the tornado one was damage. The tornado one was lit. Like, I loved using that.
Towards the
end, I was using it all the time.
Should we get into my tactics, which are probably part of the reasons I was frustrated with the game, with the bosses? Absolutely.
Maybe, yeah, because like, okay, so like to preface this and why this is hilarious. So Matt is messaging Mike and I, and he's basically complaining about, you know, and like comparing this to Tunic. And so I'm thinking about like, oh, like this game is going to get really, really difficult when I come back from vacation and I start playing this thing. And then I go through and rip through it in a night. And I'm like, hey, Matt, when does the difficulty actually start? Because this actually isn't that bad.
In all fairness, it wasn't. My problem is this. I told you I had two problems with the game, and the one was the story. We already talked through that. The second thing, I'm just not a fan of those. I'm not a fan of games that, I mean, let's be honest here. Yeah, there was some platforming and stuff, but this is mostly just go room to room to boss fight, right? I mean, there's a reason I don't play the Elden Rings and the Dark Souls and all that stuff. It's just not my type of game. So for me, I get frustrated a lot faster. You guys get my immediate raw emotions on Discord. So
I love it. It's good entertainment.
But to Mike's comment about, I mostly used two magic spells in this, that Will-O-Wisp, which was the one that you get first, and the Stone Blast. The Stone Blast I used all the time while I was platforming, because as you're jumping, you don't always see the enemies. And if you have those rocks just hanging out with you, as you're jumping, they fly towards enemies and most of the time kill or damage significantly those enemies as you're just jumping around the level. So it kind of made platforming pretty easy for me. The Will-O-Wisp, though, my whole tactic for most bosses were just run away and dodge and just continue hit B to throw out these, what, like 12 balls that sought the enemy out. And it was just like, cool, I'll just dodge all your attacks and just keep hitting B, you know, switch my elements if there was something around so I could charge my magic up.
You kept running out of magic, because if that's all you used.
Well, yeah, that tactic worked until what was that one boss's name, where it was much longer, and what was his name? He was kind of the knight dude turned into the zombie. Was it Ashram?
Ashram was the. It's like secondary final boss.
It's Bard.
Are you talking about him?
Bard.
Bard.
Yeah, it was like Baird
Beld?
Or something.
Beld.
Beld. Yep. Yeah. Beld. Thank you.
Which,
yeah.
In all fairness,
Beld was the one I think that turned into like a zombie.
Yeah. Which, too, there was a simple solution to that problem. As I said, it was very nice. It pauses the game when you switch your magic, because I just went to inventory market bro. Was his name? The little Gim. You just go to Gim and buy all his magic potions. So I basically pause the game, fill up on magic. I also was very good at switching my element. This was kind of I actually thought it was a really neat design, although it did kind of, you know, play into the tactics I was using for most bosses. Is most of them had like these attacks that if you were quick enough and good enough to switch between the elements, you basically just soaked up
magic. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So again, that's where for probably the first four stages, I didn't have a ton of issue, because all the, you know, like that dragon in stage two, I think it was it Shooting Star? Was that the one where it's just, there's lava everywhere. I literally switched to the fire element and jumped into the lava and
would just
sit there soaking up my magic, hitting the Will-O-Wisp. And I'm like, cool. I'm just, you know, and then just dodging his rock in the purple magic, which always leveled down your stuff.
See, I thought that was like, this is what was actually pretty cool about this game, is that having to toggle between those two modes, you basically toggle between wind mode and fire mode, and wind, they each kind of give you a slightly different variation on some of the things you can do, whereas like with wind mode, you can hover and like float around a level as long as you got ground underneath you, and in fire mode, you can basically just eat lava, and then when you do the slide dash, like torpedo dash and you go farther, which is really cool.
And it makes you invincible, which helped me out in that zombie fight with the smoke, whenever he turned into the gas or whatever.
Sure.
You know, I would just slide through the gas until he was done doing his thing. So,
right.
I did not know you could do that.
Yeah, I didn't do that. But like, going back to
the read to tutorials.
So what I did for the second boss, like, this is maybe why I thought like a lot of the bosses were so easy, is that for the most part, I didn't really use a lot of my magic until the very end of the game, when the bosses were getting a little too hard to get close to and I needed to be more ranged. And that's when I started using more magic. But like for the second boss, I never went into the lava. I literally just sat in wind mode, hovered by his face, and just mashed my attack button until he died. That was all I had to do. And then when the rocks came tumbling down, I just float back and forth until the rocks ran out, and then I just beat his face again.
Yeah, that's funny.
But it's completely different tactics. You mean you can still do, that's what's great about the gameplay, though, is that you can take very different approaches to tackling these mm-hmm. bosses with how little mechanics there actually are to your character. You can still, you still got a lot of options as to how you can do this, which is cool.
Yeah. And to be fair, as any game should, you try to build on your skills, and definitely those later bosses I had to do that, right? Because the magic potions help, but that wasn't always the solution, right? It definitely, when you fought Carla / all the bosses over again, there was definitely a lot of times in there where I had to get good. I wouldn't say it was great, but I had to do better. How's that? I had to do better, and I would have to sneak in some melee attacks, especially because I think by that time I had a sword and a bow that stole HP and MP.
So
you're also doing a lot of damage, right? The Will-O-Wisp isn't the best, most damaging attack in the world. So I think when I refought Beld or whatever, definitely had to kind of dodge his attacks and go in for a couple melees while I was also hitting him with magic. So, mm-hmm. I wouldn't say I got better. I didn't get good.
Sure. So I'm kind of curious. Go ahead, Mike.
I'll say there's only two or three bosses that I really did a lot of just magic on. Otherwise, it was a lot of just trying to beat him with the sword, a couple with the bow. I want to mm-hmm. say when Carla turned into that paladin or not cleric-y kind of chick. The one that throws the shield at you. That one was a bow fight. I just was I'm going to stay back here and I'm going to put every arrow into you possible.
That's exactly what I did too. At some point, I never bought any potions. I didn't buy any magic ups or anything from the shop. I literally just bought the biggest dick weapon that I could find every single time. Anytime I went to a new stage, I'm like, all right, where's my boy? He's got the good shit. I need to get some of the big weapons. And I didn't even go for anything but just straight damage. Just went for whatever had the biggest damage, that's the weapon I'm buying. And so we would get those big ass swords for Beld. When he was in zombie form, it was really great because when he would do that fire breath attack, you could just hop right behind him and I'm sitting there mashing my, auto attack key, just whipping a big sword at him and just chunking his health. And I was like, yeah, this is easy. You just beat his ass and then we're done. And then if I needed magic, I'd just jump in his fire and call it good. Yeah. I really liked though that, to make it seem like you didn't have to potion chug or really just burn a lot of money on potions so your two magic styles have levels to them. And they power up based on how much essentially damage you do to other creatures or how you kill other creatures. You can level it up to level 3. When you hit level 3, you can trigger an automatic health regen on your character, mm-hmm. which I thought was amazing. I loved that actually because it really helped me kind of balance around my boss fights to where I was fighting in one style. And then I would get hit or something and I'd be like, shit, I gotta get that back to level 3. So I would flip to the other style, try and do as much damage as I could in a small window to get that back to level 3. Yep. Because when you kill something in one stance, you get power up to the other stance. So you have to go back and forth into when you get hit, you de-level on your power and then you have to go to the other stance to get that power back up. So that was really fun to try and keep myself always regenerating health throughout the entirety of the boss fight. That was pretty much my primary goal. Mm-hmm. Whenever I went into any boss, it was okay, make sure you are always regenerating health so that in the event I do take some pretty nasty hits, I could just step back, let my health kind of regen, dodge some attacks, watch his, telegraphing, all that, and then I can just whoop his ass again,
Yeah.
So two things to that, Matt. For the next game that you play, just remember, find his ass and beat it. And
that is how you get good. You just find the ass and then you just beat it.
Okay.
Oh, I like that we made a definition to get good. It's legitimate. Find the ass and beat it.
Yep, find the ass and beat it.
I'll take that the suggestion on tactics. I'll take that into Titanfall 2, and we'll see how it goes.
There we sounds go. Good.
For being such a simple mechanic, like it's for Xbox, it's just right bumper. You pop into the different mm-hmm. forms, the fire and the wind. It was with all of that information you just gave, like it's a super deep system for how basic of a system it is. And I listened to another reviewer like before I picked the game talking about how like stupid, useless that entire system was. And I want to take that clip that you just said and send it to this reviewer just to be like, hey, did you notice it does all this? And like, if you switch to one that was in a 3, and I don't know why it did it, but it would just start healing you. Like it would eat whatever you had extra built up and just start healing you as long as you didn't take a hit. So it even had like that bonus health mechanic to it. It's kind of mm-hmm. crazy.
Yeah. No, it wasn't even just that too, is that it actually increased the amount of damage that you do when, so mm-hmm. maintaining those level 3s was really, really important, not just for having health regen, but if you really want to maximize your kind of essentially your DPS, you want to keep those as high as humanly possible so that when you do take a hit, you know, like you want to flip stances, be able to still do max damage, flip stances and keep that health regen maintained. It was a really, really awesome balance. I felt like I really mm-hmm. enjoyed that mechanic.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's you guys have said it multiple times. The controls were real tight, and having all these different mechanics, it wasn't like some super deep and insane. You got to like, you know, figure all this stuff out. But there was options. I mean, listen to us talk. I use magic most of the time. Mike switched between a bunch of stuff using bow and arrow and magic and beating ass. And I mean, you mainly just beat ass, you know, Rich. So it's like, you know, just the amount of options that we all had. And you know, I changed up some of my tactics a little, not a lot, but, you know, it you know, you can find out what works. And it's kind of a testament to the design of the mechanics and the controls and how easy it is. Yeah, the ability to just, again, on a console, hit the right bumper to just switch back and forth was just, because, you know, that it was one of those, like, as soon as you got hit, I'm hitting that switch button. Right. So I can start healing again. Right. And then I start dodging. Mm-hmm. I'm like, OK, what element am I, you know, what can I float or can I slide to dodge something, you know, or again, you know, when there's those attacks for the bosses come at you so fast. And like I said, I was a magic horse. So I was just always wanting to be in the damage for what, you know, whatever element it was, that it was nice to be able to switch between that. Hell, that was even kind of a mechanic with some of the going through the levels, right? You know, there was times where they had the, I don't know what they were called, the kind of element chains and stuff. You know, you mm-hmm. had to kind of quick switch between the elements. So,
right.
To be able to get through an area, you know, of the map. So it just, yeah, it was really nice to just kind of have that built in there. And I thought it was really cool, especially trying to keep it up on 3. Always keep it on 3, so.
Right. And so kind of building upon that too, is that it wasn't just a mechanic for you to kind of maintain your own resources, but it was also a mechanic for helping alleviate the stress of like dealing with the bullet hell mechanics, because some of the bosses had things where, like, essentially, because we haven't really explained it that much, is that when you switch between forms, you can absorb any kind of damage for that particular form. Like Matt said, mm-hmm. if you switch to the fire mode, you can sit and eat lava and regen your magic through that. Or vice versa, if you take like a wind spell to the face, if you're in the wind form, you just eat the spell and it turns into magic for you. Many of the bosses also have essentially bullet hell mechanics where like they'll throw like a big wave of fire attacks and then wind attacks and then fire attacks. So you have to flip stance, eat the attack, mm-hmm. flip stance, eat the attack. And it was like, you had to kind of juggle the stances you were in plus maintaining the resources plus making sure that you're getting, you know, good damage output at the same time. It was really, really awesome for how chaotic it sounds. It really is very intuitive. Like, I mm-hmm. thought it was very, very intuitive to be able to perform all of this at once.
Yeah. No, I think it was it Nars, the, like, third dragon you fight? That he'll sit there, like, he has an mm-hmm. attack that's, like, 15 or 20 seconds long, where he just alternates, like, he's, you know, breathing fire on you, but he's breathing magic on you that alternates between, you know, the wind and fire. So it was, you know, now for me, that was beautiful because I'm just sitting here jamming B, letting my Will-O-Wisp go at it, throwing in some melees, and then, you know, you look for the tell, then you switch over and you're just sitting there mashing magic and smacking them in the face with your sword. And it was a good time. So.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's, I mean, that was one of those boss fights where I did end up using a lot of magic because I didn't have to sit and use my bow a whole lot. But when I was sitting and just eating the fire breath, you know, I was letting my magic bar fill up. I was whacking him with my sword. And then as soon as my magic bar filled up enough, it was like, okay, cool. Burn a big magic spell and just throw extra damage at this guy. And it was, yeah, it was great. Like
for that guy,
it was awesome.
I just got behind him. Like I sat through the first wave of breath weapons. Then he like jumps at you. This is how many times like I've seen this happen because I died a few times on this guy when we got to the later boss fight. But you know he'd leap at you and then he'd hop up into the air and then shoot the fireballs down, the purple balls down at you that would like hit the ground and then slide. At that point, that's when I would just like slide underneath him and just haul ass to get behind him because he didn't shift, like he didn't turn around ever. So as long as you stayed at his tail and didn't get like sucked underneath him, because if you got sucked underneath him, you're dead. It was just, it's over. You're going to keep getting hit. But you could just sit there and like slap him in the ass. Matt, I'm telling you, find the ass.
Find the ass and then beat it.
Oh, sounds like the perfect boss for that tactic.
That strategy.
Yeah. No, I thought a lot of the boss fights had pretty good mechanics that in my, like, this is why I was a little confused when you were comparing this to Tunic, because with Tunic, the biggest gripe that I think both of us had is that a lot of the boss fights didn't feel just hard. They felt cheap. Like, yeah. It wasn't that it was like Dark Souls-y hard. It's that they did a lot of things. The bosses did things on their own to make it feel like the fight was not just cheap, but it was just unfair. Like there was just nothing you could do about a specific mechanic, or they would put you in an impossible situation where you would just take damage just because, you know, RNG or something like that. This, I never felt like that. You know, I never felt like there was a lot of mechanics that really couldn't be dodged if they if I was watching for the telegraphs or if I was essentially doing the dance of the boss fight.
Yeah.
And so I didn't think it was, that's why I was like kind of scratching my head. I was like, this doesn't seem actually that bad. Like, this doesn't feel like the bosses are cheating. The only real boss fight that I was kind of like a little annoyed by was the gauntlet at the end where you basically have to refight every single boss in the game. Cause I was like, okay, this is a little like rehashing, like this is dumb. And then if you died, you basically had to do the whole gauntlet all over again. And it was like, that's kind of lame.
I like twice in a row got all the way up to what we say his name was, Beld.
Narst.
When he gets to the zombie form, and I got all the way up there and I died of the gas because this was like my second or third time trying it. And on that boss fight, they go, that would have been what, clockwise, I think, because when you first fight him initially, his gas goes counterclockwise, and then you go fight him in his final. So I'm getting ready to do the slide through the gas, and I'm like, shit, he switched it on me, and I just took a bunch of hits with gas and died. And then I found out, oh, that's the last, all I need to do is do a little more damage, I would have been done this boss fight, you know, only two or three tries, whatever it took me. But nope, had to try it three or four more times. So
a lot of Metroidvania stuff with the boss fights, they don't feel unfair, like you're saying with Tunic. And I was just thinking about it, that every time that I died in this game, I was like, yep, I know what I did wrong there. And that's kind of the same thing you get with Dark Souls. Same things I got with Metroid.
Right.
Same things I got with Castlevania. You knew that was your fault. Like, you could have done something. You missed a dodge. You missed an opportunity to attack. Or you got greedy and just started swinging for the fences because he had such little health left, right? Like, that's what I love about these games, is that it's mostly, they're doable. You just have to take the time, slow down, and read and learn the bosses. And that was, when I got to that gauntlet boss, where it was just all the bosses back and forth, back to back, I had to remember, like, how did I defeat these guys, and what did I do, what was each of my strategies, and go back to each of that skill set just to get through it. It was like a full test of everything you've learned, and I feel like that fits to the story, too. You know, Deedlit went through, she faced all of her different fears and all of her different fights and things like that. And before, like, fighting the nihilist version of her brain, it was, I have to, like, compose myself. I'm about to go into this thing that is actually going to test me. Am I really ready for it? What are all the things that I did? And that's kind of what I feel like that boss fight was like a remembrance of, like, building up the courage to step, like, out on stage and, you know, give a big talk in front of people or something. Whatever your brain is, you know, fighting the I don't want to do this portion. Right.
She's like basically Rocky air fighting to get ready for the last boss, basically.
Getting stronger.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I thought it was, like, story-wise, it definitely made sense, but it also, like, it felt like it was just kind of, like, the reason I didn't like it is because it just felt like it was just a rehash of basically every boss that I had just fought, and it was kind of like, I didn't really want to fight these again. Like, you know, I was kind of done with that.
Yeah.
Do you think it would have made a difference if you would have played it over a couple of days versus one straight playthrough?
No,
and then you hit them?
I played it over a couple
of
days.
Okay.
Yeah. If I had to guess, probably not. I'd be kind of like, oh, that's kind of like, I get it, but it was kind of lame, in my opinion. But I understand it. You know, I'm not going to dock it too many points for that.
Yeah, and that's kind of going back to your Tunic and kind of talking through this, you know, how, you know, boss mechanics are in the cases. Last Carla boss, that's kind of a big reason. Like, this is, like I said earlier, it's like, this is a me thing. I'm just not a fan of, you know, boss fights where you gotta sit there, you gotta be, I know this isn't a game where you had to be perfect, but, like, gotta look at all the signs, you gotta have all those dodges, because really at the end of the day, yeah, like you said, Mike, I usually died and was like, that's my fault. I got, like you said, greedy, impatient, you know, I was relying on my magic the whole time, you know, or whatever, right? You know, so it felt very much like whenever I played Doom Eternal, when I got my ass kicked, I was like, I know, it was my fault. I didn't do this, or I did that, right? But again, it just kind of goes back. It's more of a preference thing. I was raging, so my emotions were getting the best of me. And I was just like, you know, I hate boss fights, and you guys got my raw emotions of this. It's bad as Tunic. Well, realistically, now that my emotions don't have the best of me, it's like, yeah, it really wasn't that bad. It's just, what, like 13 boss fights or 10 boss fights, 20? Right. I don't know how many boss fights we had through the game, and I was getting tired. And then that is one mechanic I dislike about games, where it's like, I think it was the first time I started bitching on Discord about how, that was it the two-stage boss. I hate when games do that. Yeah. Like,
oh, you,
because
like
at that,
that
point I think I was still pretty early in the game or halfway through, and, you know, you're still getting a lot of weapons and you're still getting spells, right? So, you know, I didn't have my perfect magic dodge strategy down, so it was like one of those, like, I was like, I just beat Carla and I just, like, had not a lot of life and not a lot of health left. And then it was just like, oh, here you go, fight a whole new boss that's got all their magic attacks and all their health, you know, good luck. Like, screw this.
Right. And so, like, oh, so I guess I think you've kind of already answered this, Mike. So I mean, I've never really played a lot of Dark Souls. I've played like 5 minutes of Elden Ring and I've played Tunic.
Yep.
In comparison to a lot of this stuff, I don't remember. Did you play Tunic?
I have played it. I didn't play it with you guys for the book club, but I've played it.
Okay. So comparing Tunic to, say, this to, say, Dark Souls, like, did it seem like Tunic kind of went out of its way a little too far to punish the player? Because, like, in my mind, you know, that's what the real cornerstone is for the games like this, is, like, if you die, but you can kind of figure out, like, okay, I didn't dodge that attack. I didn't time that right. I didn't strike when I needed to. I didn't block when I needed to, that sort of a thing. Versus, like, where I thought Tunic, there were a lot of times where the boss felt like just cheap, you know, like there was throwing out cheap shots or something like that. Does Dark Souls and a lot of that have that sort of, I guess it comes down to the boss, right? But
yeah, I think you have to ask Matt this question, not me. I think every boss, I played through half of 3 with you, maybe.
Dark Souls.
We got pretty Dark Souls 3. Yeah. We got pretty far. A lot of that doesn't happen. You don't see, like, it's usually pretty good boss design where it's, you screwed up and that's why you lost, or in Dark Souls specifically, occasionally there's like a glitch where something just buggy happens and you're like, what? Oh no, it's just, and you get screwed, right? That can happen too, but it's never like a design choice to try and screw you over as the player. It's all skill. It's all how well can you recognize what this boss is about to do. It's really funny because in Elden Ring, a couple of things were different. Some of your movements were a little bit faster or a little bit slower. Like, I think your roll actually has a little bit of a delay to it. So you don't instant roll like you did in the Dark Souls games, which threw me off for the first like 10 hours of that game. It did not feel the same. It didn't, like, I think it's closer to Bloodborne. But then you get into the big bosses and they have these tells, right? In Dark Souls, you know this guy's about to swing this giant ass sword. His shoulders are moving. His arms are coming up. There were a few bosses in like Elden Ring where they took advantage of you as a player for that, assuming you had played the previous games, where they would do like shoulder hitches, actual parts of the animation of the character, and then like delay for a second. Like, so they would like adjust a little bit and then swing beyond that first little movement. And it was perfectly timed with every other timing that I would think I need to roll when playing Dark Souls, but with a little bit of hesitation just into Elden Ring. So it's all skill. Like, it's all just figuring out what does my character move like? What can I do to not die in this situation? How can I do it? And if Tunic didn't have that and they were just cheap-shotting things, then, in my opinion, it's just poor boss design for not having good hard boss design that's functional.
Yeah,
right. And that's kind of, I mean, I think that's where we get a lot of the gripe from, is that, at least from me, like, I can, so coming at this from like a, just bumped my desk. Coming at this from like a World of Warcraft angle, you know, when you're doing a lot of raids, you're having to go through these really orchestrated and coordinated fights when you're trying to do this, not just with yourself, but with, you know, up to say like 25 other people or something like that. So trying to manage a lot of those mechanics, if the boss feels very fair, like, it feels good. You can identify pretty easily, you know, where the screw up was. Whereas, yeah, like when we were playing through Tunic, I felt like there was a lot of times when we were doing a boss fight that it just, like, there was nothing I could have done to really avoid the damage. Or, you know, I keep going back to this example where, like, the boss that's on like this giant pillar that just kind of floats around, and like, you really yeah. just like, there's nothing you can do other than to try and drag it in. But sometimes it'll mm-hmm. hit you when you drag it in and it'll just walk away from you and just kind of peace out. Like, it just felt borderline cheap. You know what I mean? Like, it would compound all these mechanics on top of you, so you just couldn't hit it. You know,
I was going to use that example too, and then mention how rage actually helped me in that scenario, because you had like whatever that little hook attack, and I got so pissed I just kept spamming that and beating his ass. Well, I guess he was from, I didn't get behind him. So, but yeah, no, it definitely, Tunic was one of those games where they like, it should be called like Tunic. We went out of our way to kill you, you know, and make it unfair or something. I don't know, because yeah, that was boss design. There was very different than this.
Yeah.
And kind of to throw out there too, which is funny, I'm sitting here thinking, you mentioned World of Warcraft. It's like, obviously I mentioned I didn't have too much fun in this, and obviously we didn't have fun in Tunic, but weirdly enough, aside from when we had somebody invade our game, I had fun playing Dark Souls 3, but that was cooperatively. I'm sitting here realizing I enjoy boss battles when I'm doing it with friends, because, I mean, for years I used to raid in Destiny, and those are all just go from one boss battle to the next, learn mechanics, but I can't explain that right now, or why I enjoy fighting bosses and complicated and, you know, mechanics and figuring out tells when I'm doing a co-op, but when I do it by myself, I get frustrated pretty easily. So I got some issues. I should talk to
you. Well, I mean, the bonus side for the co-op part of it is like, you get a buddy to help you. You get a buddy to like take some of the aggro or hop in and help when mm-hmm. you're fighting.
I think that's what it is yeah, like you said, as again, is when you're playing by yourself, you make a mistake, you're paying for it. Where when you like, you have a friend, like
your friend pays for it.
Well, like you pay for it together, which then you get to sit back and laugh if you wreck the whole, you know, if you wipe, And but like there's a little bit more room to not have to be perfect, right? Mm-hmm. You know, because you know everybody's, you know, we've rated, we've all done it in various games, is right. Like it's easier if everybody does stuff perfect, but if one person goes down, it's not always the end of the world, because you know there's usually something you can do to get them back in the game or something like that. So you know, I don't always feel so bad where it's like, shoot, I just, you know, I made a mistake, now I got to restart everything over again. You know, it's like, oh, there's a little bit more room to fudge there.
More dots.
Yeah, you should just start playing WoW with us, man. You probably like it.
Yeah.
Just saying.
That used to be a huge highlight of my weekend, is just listening to like a roommate or any of those online like vent recordings of people just freaking the hell out on a raid boss. No. Like the raid leader is just like screaming at the party. Yeah. Something went poorly. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That. Yeah. Matt, I mean like your teammates in this kind of situation, they don't laugh at you. They yell at you. Cause they're like, God damn it, Matt, you stood in the goddamn fire again. You wiped the whole raid.
So like I don't think they ever really, well, I mean, the clan name changed. I don't remember what they were, but shout out. I don't know if any of them listen. Shout out to anybody I used to raid with in Destiny, because they were a freaking fun crew. They didn't take anything seriously. I think Mike rode along a few times on a couple of raids, and they were just
I did not ride along. You guys carried me.
Well, to be fair,
you were riding in the trunk.
Yeah, fun story. I think with Destiny, there was quite a few raids where I beat the final boss before I ever did any other part of the raid, just because it'd be late at night, and they were all, I think, like East Coast or something like that, right? So I was a couple hours behind, and you know, somebody had to drop for work or something. They'd see me online, they'd be like, "Boss, come join us." I'm like, I'm not even leveled up to get into the raid yet. They're like, doesn't matter, just come on in. Oh, and we're playing on the hardest difficulty, so just try to stay alive, that's all we need you to do. I'm like, okay, here we go. But yeah, enjoyed the hell out of it.
Good times. There were a few times that I got brought in and they were just like, don't even try and fight. I'm like, what do you mean don't try and fight? Like, what? They're like, yeah, just stay back. And I was like, no. And I ran forward and died immediately. And then I was like, I'm going to stay back next time. You wait there. They clear the room and you just run forward. I remember, I think I got like two of the really rare drops from those just because I showed up to fill a slot to pull a lever at some point.
Nice.
I was definitely that guy. I showed up for a really hard to get unique raid exotic weapon, and I just opened the chest first time running through it, and bam, I got it. 1,000 voices, and they're like, "I hate you, Moss. Go fuck yourself." I'm like, "Sorry." Anyways, back to
Deedlit. Yeah, Deedlit. is there anything else that you guys need to chat about with Deedlit? I mean, I think the itemization was pretty good overall. You know, being able to buy the weapons, the boomerang was like the coolest weapon in the game. I used that for a really long time.
Yeah. I used that for probably longer than I should have. I was like, I love this.
Oh, yeah. The range on that thing was amazing. I was crushing bosses with that thing.
I should replay and try to do more ass beating.
Yeah. Yeah. The definition of get good. It's the act of, you know, it's the act of finding the ass and thus beating it.
Does this prompt you to want to play more Metroidvanias then, Rich? Like, is that something you'll look for
in the
future genres?
Yeah, yeah, no. I mean, like, if we decide to pick up another one for either the book club, or if I'm, you know, finding something on Steam or the Nintendo shop or something like that, absolutely. Yep. Like, I know it's one of those franchises that I probably should have, like, those kinds of genres that I probably should have been diving into, but this was a blast. Like, I had a lot of fun playing this, and awesome. I'm glad it didn't feel like it overstayed its welcome. You know, the story was kind of weird, or it's just kind of like whatever, but I thought it was fine, and I thought the gameplay was really good on its own. So yeah, I would definitely dive into this more.
Well, the next one that you need to play is called Gato Roboto. It's a Devolver Digital game. It is fantastic, and it is the only game that has made me throw an Xbox controller in the last 10 years.
Hell yeah, let's do it.
Oh, fun. Well, here's my question for you, since you've played a lot more of these type of games, Mike. Are most of them set up in the way that this one is, where there's just a ton of boss fights? Is that kind of the genre?
Yeah, it's pretty much like depending on how they tie it into the story, you are walking around trying to clear through the labyrinth or maze or whatever you want to call it. And then you fight a boss to shut down an area or to get a new item or whatever that may be.
Mm-hmm. Because like I enjoyed like whenever I was just platforming and solving the little puzzles and things, you know, the platforming puzzles and stuff to get around the labyrinth, like I really had a lot of fun with that, you know, but it was just then it would be like, you know, halfway through the game, I started getting frustrated with the boss. It's like, oh, shit, you know, and then you realize, oh, there's like two bosses every level, which again aren't that long. And then you start mixing in some of them that had those multiple fights and multiple stages. And but for me, it's like I look back at like all the platforming. And I had a lot of fun with that. And I'd love to play more games like that, just less boss fights. But
I think I'm going to have to buy you a copy of Metroid.
Yeah, for me, it was like I love boss fights like this, especially when they have like, you know, you were talking about not liking the whole phases thing. Like, I love that stuff. Like that, this is like going into like why I really love raiding and WoW is that I really like those orchestrated fights and having to learn what the boss does and mm-hmm. going through that process of figuring out not only how to avoid all of the damage coming in, but how to best output the damage to the boss at that point in time too, which is like, I love this. Like I eat this shit up. So I'm going to be playing more of these.
Yeah. No, I had fun. Just not a boss battle, boss fight guy. So at least not solo.
Yeah, we'll have to fix that.
Turtles was fun when we played Shredder's Revenge in July, right? Because you get on there with friends and you burn through it and you have a good time just beating ass there. So I could beat some ass there.
I think the big draw for me to these types of games is I always feel accomplished when I beat a boss in these things, like Dark Souls, Metroid, this game, Blasphemous. It's all Gato Roboto, especially like the sense of like, ah, you son of a bitch, like I got you. It's so great feeling, especially if you fight a boss. And Matt, maybe you're definitely not the same way here, but if I fight a boss for like 2 hours and then I finally get it. That was the big Dark Souls drive. It's like Artorias is, I think I spent maybe 6 hours actually fighting him on different days. And you finally clear that hurdle or obstacle. It feels great. And that's what I love about these types of games.
Mm-hmm. Now, see, I prefer to buy loot boxes to have a sense of accomplishment in games.
Oh, yeah. He wants to swipe to win.
In all fairness, like, yeah, I agree. I got that feeling like when I beat Carla and the millions of, you know, where you fight back through all the old bosses, you know, it felt good. I'm not going to lie. But, it was a whole lot like, was it worth putting myself getting frustrated over this?
Hell yes, it was.
Just to get this little bit of feeling. But I mean, again, going back to the cooperative side of things, you know, you feel that in, I'm sure, like you're saying, and WoW, I definitely, that always felt so damn good playing, you know, 6 hours on the final boss in a Destiny raid, and then you finally beat it. And then usually it's short lived because then you go to get the loot and find out you didn't get anything you wanted. But, you know, it always felt good, you know. So I definitely get it. I get why people play it. Just prefer to do it cooperatively.
That's fair.
Cool. I'm surprised to hear you say that after playing Destiny with your brother.
Well, there was someone that always came along there that made it frustrating.
No, just picking on it.
Some people, it's easier to pull kicking and scream or pull them through a raid. Some people do it kicking and screaming and trying to just. Oh, God. No. This is going to turn into a Destiny raid chat if we don't end this here soon.
All right. Well, yeah, we should probably wrap up this episode. Overall, you know, what would you guys rate Deedlit? I don't know if we really do the numeric thing, but we kind of do.
I think for me, or at least for me, it kind of boils down to should you play it or shouldn't you, right? You know, you know, would you recommend this game? I think from the standpoint of if you do like the Dark Souls, the boss fight stuff, definitely, yeah, give this game a try. If you're a little bit more like me, not a huge fan of the boss fight or the Dark Souls or things like that, you may probably go find something else, right? Go play something on easy. I mean, in all fairness, you could go and play Tunic on no fail mode and still have a good time. and also to follow up a little bit just on Record of Lodoss War, Deedlit and Wonder Labyrinth. I want to say it one last time here.
There you go.
If you are listening to this in early December of 2022 and you have Game Pass, go play it now if you're thinking about it. I actually, weirdly enough, was looking at games going away from Game Pass here, and I think in about 2 or 3 weeks, it's being taken off Game Pass. So
yeah,
this is game for you. Hop on Game Pass and play it now.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. And for me, at least, it's like, so looking at it on Steam, it's currently sitting at $20 on Steam. I could maybe recommend it for $20 if you're really, really into this stuff. If you're just kind of diving in for the first time like me, I'd say that it would be a really good like Steam sale pickup. Or if it came back to Game Pass, well, then definitely. Yep. Like, if you're already subscribed to Game Pass, then just play it. It's like 5 hours. It's easy.
It's kind of like TMNT. Wasn't that our thing back in July where it was like, wasn't that a $40 or $50 game? It's like, this is good, but it's the amount of content, you know, wait for
it. It was like $25 or something like that. But
Yeah, maybe it was another game. But yeah, it was the one where it's like, yeah, just wait for a Steam sale or an Xbox sale or something like that. But
yeah. All right. Well, I suppose
did Mike give a thumbs up, or was I drinking?
I recommended this to you, so
you're like, it was my book club, so obviously
you should. My idea. I would say pick it up. If you get it on sale or Game Pass, don't pay full price. It's 6 hours. Even if you do the boss rush mode that unlocks after this, you're probably looking at 7 hours. Like, it's amazing game, not at that price. So
I think for $20 it's like teetering on that border of like kind of worth it, but like, yeah, I don't know.
We're in the middle of the holidays, so keep an eye on all those platforms, your Steams, your Xboxes, your PlayStations. It's got to go on sale, right? Like, yeah. I mean, it's already on sale on Steam, because whenever I first wrote my notes here, back before the Black Friday week and weekend here and Cyber Monday, it was $25. So it must already be on sale, or they dropped the price or something.
But. Sure.
Cool.
That was adorable.
Yeah. Cool. We're ready. We're ready to wrap this up. Be sure to go to our website, campfiregamingpodcast.com. Click the link to join us on Discord. You can make your suggestions available on our Discord in the Book Club's channel, and then we might be able to do a whole entire episode based on your suggestion. And who knows, maybe we'll invite you to talk about your game pick. With that said, thank you for joining us. A reminder, our next Book Club game for the month of December will be Titanfall 2. Again, Titanfall. Yep. Titty Balls 2. Will be the December Book Club pick. We will be recording that episode towards the end of December, I think, or maybe even early January, depending on how schedules line up. So be on the lookout for that. On a side note, we are also going to be checking out the VGAs, which are coming soon. So I would recommend looking out for that as well. I think there might be an extra bonus episode coming in our near future. Don't you guys agree?
Yeah, we'll see how the TGA, VGAs, whatever we want to call them nowadays,
how they turn out.
Right? Yeah. We'll see.
We're hoping
for a bonus episode, but it could turn out to be just
crap.
All about The Last of Us and Elden Ring being remade in Unreal Engine 5. So,
all right. Well, with that said, thank you for joining us on the Campfire Gaming Podcast Book Club. We'll see you guys next time around the campfire.
It was like listening to somebody trying to you're watching somebody run, just trying to get across the finish line, and you're just stumbling. Like, but you landed it.
You know what? We got to get across sometime.
I was going to take the outro because I'm like, he always struggles with it, but you got it. You got it.
I do struggle with those outros.
Practice makes perfect.
Well.